Hello and welcome to another episode of Casting Views, the podcast that takes a topic each week and, as the name suggests, casts views. This week is going to be the first in what I hope will be another long-running sub-series of mine, and I couldn't be happier to have a voice you only heard a couple of weeks ago, but I've got him back. So I've got Slade from, well, I was going to say Slade, you were from the Game Club podcast, but you were from the Game Club podcast, the Anime Corner, Between Two Pods. Have I missed one out?
The DLC.
DLC, that's it.
Yeah, which came as a quick idea from me trying to fill in for two blokes from Blighty while Tim is in the middle of moving and doesn't have internet. So...
Hello, firstly. You okay?
Yes, I am excellent. Dan, how are you today?
I am very good. I'm very good. We were saying, it's funny because your episode only came out a couple of weeks ago, but we recorded that at the start of January, so it's been a couple of months since we've spoken, hasn't it?
We did, and I got to thinking about that now the Game Club's part of the Podpack Collective, and I'm like, man, we were doing a collaboration before we even knew that was going to be an option on the table.
That's it, yeah. So I've managed to get another Podpack Collective. So yeah, just a shout out to everyone at the Podpack Collective. Hi. I won't ask you all the questions I asked you in the dinner party episode, but yeah, how is the Game Club Pod going?
Well, it is kind of a Game Club party at this point with everything we do, but yeah, everything's good at the Game Club. I have no complaints other than, it depends when this goes out. I don't want to give away too many secrets about games we've been playing. I will say, at our time of recording, the last episode, have you listened to it? The Vampire Survivors?
Yes, yeah.
Have you played this thing?
I haven't yet. That was an interesting episode. It was an interesting episode, but no, I haven't yet.
It's, I don't get it. You just hold one stick and walk around the screen and stuff happens and flashing lights, and maybe I don't have that right level of ADHD-ness to kick off with it, but just...
Which is funny, actually, because you were the voice of reason for unpacking, wasn't it? Was it mm-hmm. you? Yes, it was. Yeah, so it's funny because I was going to say, yeah, it feels like it could be a similar-ish thing to that. I really enjoyed that episode, the Vampire's Fight. I mean, I've enjoyed all of them, right? But that one, because it was quite, what's the word? Your views were very, there was no opposite, beating around the bush, right? And they were. One of the ones where it was opposite.
It's not often I just get to make my opinion clear by making a fart noise with my mouth. tells you everything you need to know about the game.
We were talking as well before we press record. And you know what? I've often said when I do link up with other podcasters, sometimes we should just press record straight away, because sometimes some of the conversation we have, I was mentioning that through the magic of editing and scheduling, I think it should come out before this, but I'm looking to record my first proper solo episode. Yeah, you've had to dip your toes into that yourself with the DLC, right? So you're covering the early Call of Duties, aren't you?
So the three I picked, they're all they're console exclusives, right? So they never had a proper PC port or anything like that. So, you know, I'm not going to ask Joey or Tim to say, hey, would you go pick up an old Xbox 360 of these three games so we can talk about it? And it's something I wanted to talk about. And it's been interesting to do the solo dive.
I was saying to you that I know I'm probably going to do about 20 takes. Because it'll be, I'll record something, and I mean, when I've done the Christmas episode, and that was like 20 minutes, and it was just saying Merry Christmas and all that, right? It took probably about 5 or 6 attempts. And sometimes, like, when I've had a request from, like, Justin over at the Movie Wire to record a couple of one-liners, I'm doing that about 20 times. I'm like, no, let's do it again. No, I'm like my own director.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we were talking about, you know, like how I break it down to do the solo stuff, just little bits here and there. Because if you've never had to read something, you'll sit there and you're reading the, you know, the script off your screen, and there's just one word you're going to get hung up on, and you're going to keep repeating that sentence, and it'll be some word in that sentence.
Yeah.
And it's just over and over again, you're just flubbing on it.
Do you know what? And something, I'll let you into a secret. So I had probably the first year of the podcast, you know, I had my old setup, an old microphone, I call it old laptop. Then I've got a newer laptop, a newer microphone. But there was always some problem. There was always a problem with the microphone that if I wasn't speaking for a bit, by a bit, it could even be just 30 seconds, the audio, the first word I'd say would be muffled. Right. And I looked at all settings and I tried this and that and couldn't do it. It couldn't get it to stop. And sometimes if you're saying something low level, it wasn't picking up. And I found that sometimes in some episodes when I'm recording with someone that I find I'm constantly having to make noise or repeat a word at the start to almost like warm the microphone up. And I was doing that when I'm doing the solo episodes, because obviously I can't just keep, I'll just be running out of breath because I'll just be keeping a noise going or some words going. But I've recently got reacquainted with an old friend of mine recently who had an old laptop hanging around, and I've got it and it's perfect. So the microphone's doing everything. So I've now found I've got like a new lease of life and I'm not having to like be overly cautious. But it does, because it's in the back of your head. I'm thinking at the end of an episode, I've got to quickly check the audio. So it's amazing how sort of even however long in our journey, and I don't even remember how I've got onto this topic, but how we keep changing our views. And the fear of doing a solo episode, I think, has always been because I've been worried about how my own audio alone would come out.
Right. And it's especially because you and I, we both do editing. So not only are you in the fear of just listening to your own voice and talking and reading, and then you're like, I have to listen to myself for the next 20, 30 minutes. And sometimes you go, what is that noise I just made? What was that?
It's, do you know what it is? It's me. You know, when you're getting excited about saying something or enthusiastic and you've merged two or three words together to make one completely incomprehensible word, you know, and I'm like, what was I saying? And yeah, the other thing about editing, because I love the editing part. Now, I know some people, they just take the audio, maybe put it through a filter and then put it out there. But I actually like to go through it a couple of times. But yeah, if you've ever heard yourself saying the same thing over and over again when you're trying to narrow down a noise or something, it can get quite irritating.
Yeah. Oh, it gets very frustrating. The other thing, though, you notice weird patterns in waveforms that you're looking at when you're editing. And I can recognize certain curse words when Tim says them pretty well. So I just know where to like snip it out.
Oh, the mouth on that Tim, though, right? and between two pods, yeah, that's going from strength to strength, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's doing good. At the moment, just wrapped up the last edit for season two of it. And then, you know, we'll be doing season three soon. You know, it's going great. People like to talk. I have one person, I haven't scheduled it with them yet, but they host their podcast from their bathtubs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I have to figure out how to get all this into the bathroom over there because I want to join in. And
I don't know if you saw my message in the Podpack chat today.
I did.
Can I wear a disguise and come on again?
Yeah, we can figure out something, Dad, I'm sure. I have some extra questions, but I have a surprise for the end of season two I don't want to give away yet.
And then we'll be
on in the season three.
Okay. All right. We'll leave that on that cliffhanger. Now, the reason for getting you back so soon was you actually approached myself and Josh Scar from Talking Smack about an idea. You said you had an idea. You said it didn't necessarily fit your pod, maybe more mine and Josh. And then I kind of did the noble thing because I really wanted it, but I sort of said to Josh, no, look, Josh, if you want it, have it. And then Josh sort of said, no, I think it's more because of you. And I went, yes, thank you, Josh. But no, I really appreciate sort of one you coming to us with that and him sort of saying, no, it's fine for me to have. And yeah, I don't know. Do you actually want to just do the pitch for it?
Yeah, because I was talking to my girlfriend about this and just had the idea of let me backtrack a little bit. Everybody knows Attack on Titan, my favorite show of all time. We've gotten my sister's, my girlfriend's sister. See, this is what we're talking about when you say things the wrong way. Yeah. I've gotten my girlfriend's sister to watch it, and she was visiting. She lives out of town, but she was visiting. So it was me, the girlfriend, sister, and we're watching like the first episode. And Attack on Titan's a great show to rewatch because its foreshadowing is masterclass, right? And my girlfriend's like, you know, doing all the gasps and everything. I'm having to shush her so she's not giving away, you know, important things and plot points. And I'm like, you know, this would be a show if I could wipe my memory and experience it again for the first time, not knowing anything. And then that gave me the idea. And I was like, well, I know two people with podcasts, and this would be a good idea for.
And the rest, as they say, well, will be history when this goes out. It's something I've always thought about. And I think it's a great idea because, for me, some people may be shocked to hear, but I quite like Mass Effect, the game, right? Now, I play it year in, year out, and I still enjoy it, but I've often sat there and thought, oh, I wish I could just relive it again for that first time. Now, because of this, I'm thinking about calling this series Mind Wipe. I think it does what it says on the tin, right? And yeah, so what I thought, you gave that idea and I've gone and run with it. And what I'm thinking is, and it'll probably change over time, but I want to get a podcast on because I love talking to podcasters. And like I said, you gave me the idea. So you have to be guest number one. That's the rule. And I'm going to run through a list of things or events that, yeah, I'm going to ask you if you could relive for the first time again. And the caveat will be, not the caveat, but the implication being, you know, you might come to a game 20 years later and not enjoy it, but you're going to replay it and have that same love that you had the first time around because you're just trying to recapture that emotion.
Right, right. And Dan, all you've told me that I heard out of that whole sentence was I have to keep coming up with ideas for new episode topics so we can hang out more. That's all I heard. So I'm just sitting there thinking about it.
Oh, I love that. We'll get into it. We'll hear from some friends. Now, because we've mentioned him already, and because this is called Mind Wipe, and we know that Josh's favorite saying is forget about it, right?
Right, right.
We're going to hear from Josh and the guys at Talking Smack. It's almost like I've put some thought into this one, right? It's amazing.
Right, right, right.
So let's hear from Talking Smack and we'll get straight back into it.
If you love talking blockbuster movies, comic books, animation, and TV shows, check out Talking Smack, hosted by me, Josh Scar, along with my rotating cast of co-hosts. We will talk superheroes, movies, animation, and comics with you every Wednesday on your favorite podcatcher.
Right, we are back. So, Slade, I've been really looking forward to this because I love just finding out about people. We were saying again before we press record, I just love talking to podcasters. And the dinner party, just like, I guess, Between Two Pods for you, is just a way of getting under the skin or lifting the lid a little bit. And to me, there's nothing more personal than knowing the movies or TV shows or books you want to relive. So I chucked a number of things at you.
Yes.
I've got an order, but we can go in any order, but I think we'll go in my order because, you know, it's I'm the host. So
it's your rules, Dan.
Yeah. So what I think I said to you is 1 to 3 of each, and I probably should have put some stipulations, and I will in the future. I don't want there to be any cheating. So say for a game, I don't want Call of Duty because there's been like 100 of those, right?
Right.
I think what I might do is if we get like a trilogy, like I'm doing this for a caveat for me because to allow Mass Effect, right? I think if there's like an enclosed trilogy, like the BioShock trilogy or Mass Effect, I think we can do that. Or even maybe like, say, the Black Ops series. I want to sort of stop people saying, I don't know, a film where there's 100 entries in the franchise. So without further ado, let's just get stuck into it. Because gaming is a bit obvious for you, I'm going to start with gaming. So let's get so let's get your sort of 1 to 3 games that you would love to wipe and relive again.
Sure. So Dan, I've done a great job in this, by the way. I got 3 for all of these. I want you.
Okay.
To
excellent. Excellent.
I got 3 for all these, and the 3 games of choice I would have. The first one, if you're a long time listener of the Game Club Pod, you would know it's Undertale. One of 2 games I've given a 10 out of 10 to. I think it's perfect. Forwards and backwards. Great characters. The three main ways to play. Do you know about it? Have you played Undertale, Dan?
Do you know what? It's one I've not had the pleasure of playing at the moment.
Ooh, it's so good. So I don't want to give away too much, but it has 3 main runs in it. There's the neutral run, which is what most people do their first time. You would play it like any other RPG running through. Then you have the pacifist run, which is the hardest of them because you can't kill any monsters. You have to spare every single one, and that includes the boss fights.
Wow.
And it gets very tedious at the end of the game because you've never gotten a chance to level up.
Oh, right, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, you're level 1 the whole time. So you have 20 hit points and the boss does like 400 damage. It is it is wild.
So how do you avoid fighting then?
I don't want to give it away.
Okay.
It's one of the few games then that, and I'll tell you this too, if you play it and don't like it, I'll give you your $10 back because that's all it costs.
Okay, you've heard
I'll send you $10 back if you don't like it.
It's a verbal contract, right?
And then you have the Genocide run, which is where in each, it's set up like an old SNES or Fanicom like RPG. So if you're in the certain like town or level, you basically have to keep fighting and killing every monster until the game says, but no one came.
Oh, okay.
So nothing can be left.
Yeah. Because I do remember that being quite flavor of the month at the time, that game, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. I would highly recommend it to anybody. The next one is, I think this is peak VR gaming. Nothing has gotten better. And it is Half-Life Alyx.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of the Half-Life series, but Half-Life Alyx is such a step forward in immersive gaming and its concept in general. I love it. It's fantastic. One of the coolest things when it puts you into Alyx is it's the Valve Index, so VR headset. Its controllers, I wish I had one here on my desk, but I do not right now. It basically knows all your finger movements.
Right.
Right. So everything you do in the game, you see Alyx's hands move as yours move. You know what I mean? So if you see a hat on the ground, you can pick up the hat and put it on your head and you'll see like the brim of the hat sticking out.
Okay.
I've never enjoyed looking for loot in games as much as this one, because when you're looking through boxes and other things, you're just sitting there ripping them open, throwing. It's like Christmas, you know. It's so much fun. Combatively, narratively, it's a great time. I think it's the best VR game that exists at the moment. And the last one in this is the one and only, well, my favorite JRPG series, Persona 5 Royal. I wish I knew nothing about that game and got to experience all 160 hours blind again.
I knew this would feature.
It's so good. The music, the combat, the characters. I love them all. And I've been thinking about replaying it, but I just don't know if I have the time to sit down and commit.
That's a problem, isn't it? That's the problem. Was that one that just clicked straight away with you? Had you played all the previous ones?
For Persona?
Yeah.
No, I started with 5 because I've never been a JRPG guy. Like, you can see our Final Fantasy VII review. I didn't like it. We played the original one, and I said earlier this year in an episode we recorded, if I'm spending more time looking at the wiki or a walkthrough to play your game, I'm giving it a negative score. That was definitely one. I don't know, something clicked about it. I think it's the way that it balances like the fighting, combat, dungeon crawling, and the slice of life pretending to be a Japanese high schooler with the music and the, I mean, it's just stylish all day long. Like, the music is flavorful. Even the menu screen just pops and is fun to go through. And I don't know how you do that in a game, but the mad lads at Atlus figured it out.
It's funny, isn't it? There are a few games that do some really cool and clever things with, like you said, the humble menu screen. And it's things like that where, you know, the little attention to details or the little touches like that that make you kind of enjoy a game even more, isn't it?
That's basically what they've done, and it made it so much more fun just because, like, everything keeps this, like, jazz, funky, stylish appearance up.
Yeah.
And the narrative is, I mean, it's good. I don't want to say it's, like, the best narrative I've ever experienced, but it's very good, and it keeps you guessing at every turn. Like, when you think you know who the big bad guy is, turns out not to be that person, you know?
Yeah. It's three different kind of games as well, aren't they? So I know you've got two RPG type, but they're different, different, aren't they?
Yeah, they're two very different RPGs. One's very much a standard JRPG, and the other one is like an homage to them, but it's definitely a Western RPG.
And Half-Life Alyx, is that the original add-on to that game, or is that a purely
It's a full standalone Half-Life game. Takes place between the story-wise, takes place between Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you play as Alyx Vance, who's the daughter of Eli Vance. He's a scientist from the first game and your best friend, I guess, in the second game. And it's a full standalone. I mean, if you buy it, it's a full $60 retail game.
Okay,
nice little 10 hours in VR. The only thing that's weird about have you done much in VR, Dan?
No, I think it would make me sick, I think.
So I've been a long time believer, and that's probably going to be the future of gaming. So like up on the shelf over there, I need to find a place for the new shelf, but I have the original Oculus dev kit.
Okay. Oh yeah,
that thing made me nauseous. But VR is so good now, the only thing that'll really throw you off is when you start playing it and then you take the headset off because the controllers have died and you need to charge them, and suddenly it's nighttime.
Yeah. I also think I just don't have enough space to be flailing my arms around and stuff like that. I honestly don't. I've done a couple of VR things, you know, in London when you go to a couple of events. Went to the Shard Tower. You go up there and they do this classic one where you're stepping out on a plank and then they take everything out away from you. And it is, it's amazing how your brain is deceived by what you're seeing. Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. Like in this room here, I actually have it set up for walking play, so I can like walk around and everything. And it's, you know, in the immersive standpoint, when you're actually having to crouch to you know, get under things or hide behind cover.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't press B. You actually got to like get down.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of my favorite things, and it says more about me, is watching people, like TikToks of people having big fails when they're playing VR.
Yeah, like they'll punch the TV or a small child or whatever, and it's always funny.
I've said this probably so many times, and I know I'm always, whenever I talk about VR, I don't know if you've seen it, there's a British snooker player, Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously great snooker player, played for years. And he was trying a VR snooker game. And at one point, because there's also the muscle memory, he goes to lean on the table and just falls straight over because the table's obviously not there.
Right. And he thinks the one thing that'll really scare you is that, like, when you touch a piece of furniture on accident and you're like, you will jump because, like, you know, your brain says that's not there, but it is.
I've done a couple of these events in London, these immersive events. There was one like, what was it? War of the Worlds, and it's a mix between real life actors, and then at some point you'll put a VR headset on and there'll be a scene play out. And there's one where you're in, like, I think it's like in this church, and you're seeing this scene play out, and the Martians attack, and there's someone who grabs you, so there's tentacles coming out, and there's someone who's grabbing you from you know, because obviously you can't see them. It's such a clever way of manipulating you.
One of my favorite things is, you know, if somebody comes here and, oh, I want to try this, I'll put the headset on them and I'll hold the, you know, they can only see what's in the headset, right?
Yeah.
And I'll physically hold the controllers out in front of them and I'm like, just come up here and get these. And they'll have the headset on. They can't see me in the room, but they will instinctively grab the controllers. And I'm like, you grab something in the real world and you're only looking at the digital. How does that make you feel?
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah. It's amazing. What I was going to say before we moved on is, so talking about Half-Life, does it feel like then Half-Life 3 confirmed now then? Is that what we're saying?
I don't want to get into it. They threw a wrench in the works of the ending of Half-Life 2 episode 2. They retconned a major character death at the end of that. So I don't even know.
That's right. Do you know what? I've got to go through the orange box again. I've got to go through it. I love those games.
They're a lot of fun. But yeah, they retconned a major character death from the end of Half-Life 2 episode 2. Okay, and I don't know what they'll do. I have no idea. But
well, at this point they're just laughing now.
I don't think they know what to do, to be honest.
No. Cuz how long's it been now? Is it 20 years? No.
Getting close on that.
Yeah. Jeez, yeah.
I figured there'd be something for the Steam Deck, cuz it seems like every time Valve does a piece of hardware, they have a game or something like that that comes along with it. Now, for the Steam Deck, there is not Aperture Hand Labs for the VR headset, but there's Aperture Desk Job.
Right.
So it's a free game. It's set in the Portal universe, and it's to teach you about your Steam Deck and what all it can do. You know, they've done that for everything, but I would figure that would be the next game to get a, you know, or the next system to bring in a Half-Life game.
Yeah, probably find it's a hidden game in the Steam Deck, and it'll come out in 20 years' time.
There'll be a gaming video, and I'll be like, did you know, in your Steam Deck? And I'll be digging through my pile of old games, like, where is it?
Actually, before we move on, Portal 2, that would probably be a good one for VR. You'll be throwing up left, right, and center,
so
right?
So there is a Portal VR game.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, somebody's done it. I don't get motion sick, but it kind of made me a little queasy. I'm not a motion sick person.
I can imagine, yeah.
But it's done pretty well. It's fan-made. It's not from them. There is what's called Aperture Hand Lab, where they just get you used to, like, using the controllers and knowing how your fingers interact with it.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, you're not flinging through portals. That was the main thing in it. You never, like, launched yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? Right. The cleanup bills. Right. So, moving on, let us do movies. This one I'm interested to hear.
Right. Because, you know, as many other people, I'm not a major movie person. But my three, I have two comedies and then a, look, if you want to get me a sit down for a movie, a war movie is a great way to do it. So we'll start with that. I have Fury.
Okay.
Which I'm also a bit of a tank nerd, but so I have it down. Have you seen Animal House?
I probably have, but I don't, my memory.
It's like an old 70s comedy about like a frat house that's like failing and them it's
National Lampoon, right? Isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And then Forrest Gump.
Okay, yeah.
Which I always feel like I find a little something different to laugh at that movie every time I watch it.
Forrest Gump as well, for me, just a great soundtrack.
Oh, it's excellent soundtrack.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to let you into a secret as well. I'm not necessarily the biggest of movie people. Not that I don't like movies. I just tend not to watch them. I'm so behind. You know, I'm probably about 5 years behind on everything.
Right. I'm with you. I don't know. I think it's the... I said, I think either to Antonio or Justin that, like, I think it's the interactivity. Like, I could sit there and, you know, play a six-hour game in a setting because I'm engaged.
Yeah.
But there's something about, like, watching a movie. I'll end up on my phone at some point.
Yeah. You know, it's too true. It's too true. I mean, also, if I've got a couple of hours free, I think I'd much rather, stick the Xbox on, or it'll be just stick a TV show on, you know. I almost feel like, I don't want to get invested in a film unless I've got quite a few hours around it.
And see, that's the thing. You say it's the time commitment, but you'll sit down and watch a season of a show, you know.
Or probably play a game for twice as long. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Makes no sense. I don't know. Our brains somehow, Dan, they're wired the same way for this.
I think, like you said, I think it's the interactivity of the game. That's where my heart lies. So let's start with Fury then. So you said because it's a war film and tanks, I'm guessing then it's the perfect combination of interest then, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Have you seen Fury?
Again, I'm going to say no.
It's got Brad Pitt, Shia LaBeouf, a couple other big name actors in it. It's really good. It's about a tank crew at the end of World War II. It's a really good dramatization. And the thing is, this is when, you know, people are nowadays are aware Shia LaBeouf is a crazy person.
Yeah.
Apparently in this movie, like he wanted to be like a, what do they call it? A method actor where they get really invested. So he wouldn't shower.
Wow.
And he actually pulled out one of his own teeth because the character was supposed to be missing one. So he,
There's method acting. Then there's that, right? It's
right. A little too much.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that. And Animal House. Yeah. Again, that's John Belushi, right? Is it?
Yes, it is.
Or is it James? No, it's John, isn't it?
John Belushi, yes.
Yeah.
That's also another one with a tremendous soundtrack, by the way.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yes. I might get you to watch it because of the soundtrack.
Well, this was it. You know, just like the dinner party series where I'm trying to get ideas for recipes, this will be good suggestions for what I can watch and listen to.
Exactly.
Yeah, because the big National Lampoon films, obviously, well, over here anyway, are the vacation films, right? So the Cherry Chase. But yeah, I know Animal House has always got a reputation for being quite a raucous, raunchy
film,
isn't it?
Yeah. Raunchy, definitely. It's a lot of inappropriate humor, but that's up my alley for things to laugh at.
Forrest Gump is, again, three very different films. I mean, I'll put my hand up. I do like Forrest Gump. That's one I have seen. And I've got the soundtrack on vinyl, and I know you're another vinyl fan.
Yes.
That soundtrack I remember having for years because it's just so good, isn't it?
It's excellent. It's excellent. And the thing in that movie, there's always something new to laugh at, like as you watch it, because you probably missed it the first time because you were laughing.
You know, and I know that it gets a lot of flack because it's like the too cliche about him influencing the history, but that's the fun bit of it, right? That's let your imagination go. But it's the human story ultimately right at the heart of it, isn't it? It's quite heartbreaking as well, isn't it?
It is. It's as funny as it is sad. And you're right, though, about there's no way this one person influenced all these things, but it's the ridiculousness of it. And as it gets ramped up, that makes it so much fun, really.
Exactly. Like the ping pong when he's playing the table tennis.
he's like playing that. By himself and he's got two paddles just going at. Yeah, it's like
I like that. And again, sort of three solid choices there. We're trying to see if we can get to who Slade really is. So I don't know, because you're picking a real eclectic mix of everything so far. Okay, let's move on to TV shows.
Right. So for these three, obviously Attack on Titan.
Okay, yeah.
It's finished. It's wrapped up. I'm going to keep saying this until you end up watching it then. That's how this works. And then I'll be back to talk about it. Or these next two, I'm sure you've also seen, and you'll probably agree on these, is Breaking Bad.
Yep.
I've actually done the Breaking Bad tour in New Mexico, where they, like,
oh, really?
They put you in the RV and they take you off to all the different, like, locations they filmed
That's
in.
That's cool.
A lot of fun. And then The Sopranos.
Yes, yes. Okay, okay.
Which I've been meaning to rewatch The Sopranos, but that show, so good. So good. I wish, I see why when I was younger, my dad was so into it. And like, I couldn't watch the living room TV on whatever night it was that it came out. That was his. You weren't allowed to talk if you were in the living room. It was just his for an hour.
Yeah, it's... So, okay, let's start with The Sopranos. It's a very interesting show because it is, obviously, it's violent. I mean, it surrounds a mob, right? But
right.
The ingenious hook is about him being, what's the word?
In therapy, I guess you would say. Yeah, for his mental health as he goes through all this and the therapist can't, you know.
Yeah, and it's
she can't
just
say anything.
Yeah, and it's just the case. There's a couple of things there. So obviously, kind of growing up in an Italian family, it's about having, the alpha male Italian head of being, what's the word, vulnerable, I guess.
Right. He's not allowed to show his emotions or anything like that. Yeah. I think that's kind of the genius of the show, is that not only do you get to watch him do all the mobster things, deal with his family life at home, deal with the FBI and what, you know, and the other mob families, but then you get to see the vulnerable side of Tony Soprano.
And obviously, yeah, he's the head of the mob as well. So I mean, it's like, right. and all the thing that entails. And again, it's like the twists and turns with, it's like his own mother, isn't it?
Yeah. The problems he has with just his own mother, not including, you know, his kids and everything like that. It's a great show.
It's another show I need to rewatch. I remember when I watched it, it was on like my TV services on demand, and I got to the final episode, didn't watch it that day, maybe even that week, and then they took it off the next week, so I never got to watch the final episode. I mean, obviously, I then had to look it up, but
yeah,
that is one I want to go back to. I definitely do. I think, like you said, it's really clever. I guess it's not similar, but Breaking Bad, there's that similar vibe, isn't it, about that?
They're about ongoing. And I think those both shows, Breaking Bad more so than The Sopranos, just the person with the mundane life getting into the criminal underworld is so, so intriguing.
Yeah.
And Breaking Bad really gets you hooked from like episode one, just with the beginning and the, you know, the RV and, what's his name? Bryan Cranston standing out there in his tiny white.
It's one of the few shows I break my rule on. I don't like, so my wife can binge watch like a series in a night.
Right.
I can only watch three or four episodes at most. If it's like an hour long, I'll probably only be able to watch two episodes. If it's like half hour shows, maybe three or four. But I then start clocking off. That's the only show I remember binging and plowing through it because I just found it compelling at the time.
Yep.
And I need another rewatch, and it is going to be, I mean, again, spoilers, I've got it on my list for the pilot view episodes I'm doing with Justin.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you haven't watched Better Call Saul yet.
That's correct, yeah.
Dan, we got to fix this. You need to watch Better Call Saul. One of the most interesting things, and it sounds like, you know, Breaking Bad, I wish I could think of the writer's name off the top of my head. But, the way they pay attention to little details, because there's a throwaway line Saul has when everything's finally going downhill in Breaking Bad, where he says, I'm probably going to end up managing a Cinnabon somewhere in Ohio. And then it starts Better Call Saul, and he's the manager of a Cinnabon in Ohio. And it seems really random at first until you think about, you know, somebody pointed out that line on Reddit. And I'm like, oh, that's good continuity right there.
So is it, because I want to do a Breaking Bad rewatch, and so does it make sense then to watch Breaking Saul, Bear Call Saul first then, because that is technically a prequel, isn't it?
No, but only for Saul Goodman, the lawyer. So you don't really... Okay. It's better to watch Breaking... I would do Breaking Bad. Did you watch El Camino?
Yes, yeah.
The conclusion? That's also really good. I would do those two and then watch Better Call Saul.
Okay.
Because there's so much... I mean, Breaking Bad, the stuff from it isn't really relevant until like near the end of Better Call Saul. So, okay. I mean, you have time to... You know, well, I don't see you have time, but you know, it's there's a lot to cover before you get to the Breaking Bad portion.
Okay, and to let's get to the bit I was avoiding. So, Attack on Titan. Look, right, I think I'm just intimidated by anime in terms of how much there is and where to start. I think that's what it is.
Right.
You know, it's yeah. So, I mean, is Attack on Titan like a good one for someone who's never watched any of these shows?
The answer is yes and no. The reason it's no is that it's going to set your standards really high.
Right. Okay.
But it's so good, Dan. You know, I was talking about the rewatch earlier. We were noticing characters who aren't even around till the fourth season.
Okay. Right.
Being shown in the first episode. Not only that, some of the main villains.
Okay, being around
in the first episode. I would say it's one of those, if you give it six episodes and you don't like it, you're free to bow out. But that the hook in episode six
will probably
have you wrapped in. But
Okay. Let me make you this promise. I will start watching it in the next week. I'll give the first couple of episodes a go.
Yeah. Okay. And the big thing is that everything is important as a plot point.
Okay.
There's no little detail that is left out.
Right, we'll do that, and then you can get me back onto one of your shows to talk about it, but I will do.
That's how I'll get you back for Between Two Pods. We're going to sit
there
down
and talk. There you go. There you go. Right, so on to kind of slightly different things now. So we've had the classic games, movies and shows. Now we're going to go on to, I said to you, albums or artists, so happy for you to take a bit of freedom with how you approach it.
Sure. Now, Dan, I know I've asked you before, but, you know, it's the question of what's an album you can listen to forward and backwards without skipping a song. So I've brought to you three of those, all by the same band, Bayside, who's absolutely my favorite band of all time. The albums are Cult, and I would do the White Edition because that's the one with the extra tracks, Vacancy, and The Walking Wounded. All three of those don't have a single song in there that I will skip as I listen to them. Just three absolute banger of an album.
Okay, and you'll have to remind me. So what kind of music genre are they?
More punk rock. Punk rock. They write a lot of sad, depressing songs, but those always end up being my favorite.
So with these then, is there... So I don't know, how long have they been around? So is there also like a time thing? So if you listen to it, is it going to put you in a certain time or place?
Not really. I'd say they're all timeless. They're about to release their new album. I didn't send you. I pre-ordered it on vinyl. I got a limited edition, one of a thousand. So when it shows up at my house, I'll send you the photo of it. But girlfriend and I are going to go see them in Nashville next month.
Okay. So, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. I got the VIP tickets, which were a little expensive, but the fact you get the little meet and greet and there's a private acoustic concert they're going to do.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, for the VIP tickets. That kind of sold me on it.
Yeah. What I say to people about that is obviously not asking numbers that, but if you could afford it, it's about these experiences. And you've just said you've bought three albums by the same band, so you clearly love them. So why wouldn't you?
Exactly. And that's what the girlfriend taught me into. She's like, nope, we're doing the VIP tickets. And I'm like, all right, twist my leg for it one good time. And
so are you a music person? Do you, I mean, I know, I think I know the answer, but do you love your music?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's odd to not hear music in my house at nearly all times. If I'm not sitting in here with, you know, the headset on doing something, if I'm cleaning up, making dinner, there's probably a Bluetooth speaker somewhere nearby or the record player's out, you know, playing something.
It's funny with me, I tend not to like listening to music in the car, which is weird. But when I'm at home, I've got my record player, and if it's not a podcast, it will be. I'll stick a record on. And like I said, I intentionally buy records now because I know I will listen to the whole album.
Yeah, I've been doing this thing lately where I will, go on Spotify or I guess Apple Music. I don't know if they do that or not, but you'll go on Spotify and I'll just pick an artist that I like and I just hit play. I don't pick an album. I just hit play.
Right. Okay.
And then it just, that's what everybody's listening to is what it puts you down and through. Okay. And lately I've been really enjoying doing that because there's a lot of songs I feel like I would have missed out on, but it's been a lot of fun to do that. I would recommend it. It's a good way to get to know an artist.
Yeah, and you said, these are ones, yeah, when you find an album that you don't skip a track, it's just an amazing feeling, isn't it?
It is, when you just put it on and not skip anything out of it, because a lot of people know, I mean, I love the Foo Fighters, but if I put on one of their favorite albums for me, Wasting Light, I'll end up skipping White Limo, because I just don't want to listen to Dave scream for 4 minutes straight, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, I've said it before on my show a number of times. I was a massive Oasis fan. Mm-hmm. I am a massive Liam Gallagher fan. But, you know, there are certain songs like, now even Wonderwall, it was just so overplayed.
Right.
Over here that it's... You know, I'm not saying it's a bad song, but I probably would skip it because I've heard it so much and it's now not in my top tier of Oasis songs. And right. as crazy as that might sound to some Oasis fans, yeah, it's just it got overplayed. But that's the beauty of having differing opinions, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the nice things about Bayside is, I say nice things, I think it's a blessing and a curse, is that they never got big enough to be on the radio constantly. You may hear it here or there kind of thing, but it never got overplayed.
Yeah, because that's the thing when, and especially nowadays, I guess, with all the socials and being able to put music on TikTok, you just, when a song grabs hold, it just, it's just everywhere, isn't it?
Right. You hear it like a million times in a row and it's
yeah,
way overplayed and you're like, oh, I hate it now.
That's really cool. Like I said, it's nice. I like the fact you've chosen it all from the same band. I mean, that just shows obviously yeah. your love for them.
Oh, there's not a song I don't know by them. I've listened every single album, but those, if I had to pick three favorites, you know, the new album's not out yet. They've dropped a couple singles from it, which I do love. But if I had to pick three albums for you to listen to, it'd be those three.
Okay. And do you buy them? So do you listen to them online or do you say for them, you buy them on vinyl or physical?
So for these, I know at some point I bought a CD of them. Where that is now, who knows? So mostly online, but I had just ordered their new album. It's going to be on vinyl, so went ahead and ordered it. It's really cool looking. It's like all white, but it has splashes of blue and red through it.
Well, you know, we've had our conversations. These vinyls, they make them look really appealing nowadays, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Because I just do think, are physical albums even a thing anymore? I mean, they seem to, obviously, vinyls made a massive resurgence.
Yes.
But CDs apparently on their way out. But I'm still not a big one for streaming music. I know that sounds funny. I prefer listening to a physical album. Strange.
I think it's what you said. It keeps you from sitting there going, eh, no. You know, the doom swiping instead of doom scrolling, you know, to find another song.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's what it. I think that's the appeal of doing albums.
No, absolutely. Right, let's move on to three or one to three books. Are there any books you would love to reread?
Yeah, so I have three. I don't get a lot of time to read, so especially in my line of work, I do a lot of traveling, driving. So audiobooks are my best friend.
Mm. Yeah.
So the three I would pick, they're all autobiographies. Okay. The first one is Friends, Lovers, and The Big Terrible Thing by Matthew Perry.
Okay.
It's about his life, and there's so much I didn't actually, you know about him, and he does not hold shy of his problem with drugs and alcohol and everything else.
Yeah.
He also reads it himself, which if the last time you really remember Matthew is like on Friends, I kind of don't recommend listening to him read it, because after his stroke and all the years of addiction, he doesn't even sound like himself anymore.
Right. Okay.
It's a little sad, but it's a tremendous book. The Storyteller by Dave Grohl, who we've talked about with Dinner Party and everything. This book's really good. His life is wild. He's one of the few people actually born in DC. His dad was like I don't really know what you would call it, but he was like a lobbyist in politics.
Right. Yeah.
and just how he grew up and the bands he played with and all the different musicians. It's wild to listen to. There's a story about, you know, he's buddies with Paul McCartney.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
And Paul's over there, and his oldest daughter was learning piano. So Paul goes and sits down, and, you know, is playing piano with her. And they don't realize, you know, they're kids, so they don't understand. This is Sir Paul McCartney. Yeah. This is just dad's friend, Paul. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And the other, one of the other daughters goes and gets a plastic cup and writes tips on it and puts it on the piano to be funny. Because, again, this is not Sir Paul McCartney of the Beatles. It's just dad's friend Paul, who's good at playing piano and can sing.
But I like also like how you said, though, just to go back a little bit, yeah, the bands he played with. Yeah, that little known one, Nirvana, you might or might not have heard right. of them. Yeah.
And the last one is called Last Words by George Carlin. His brother actually reads it, and his brother and him sound nearly identical. So it's that was an interesting way to learn about how he grew up and what really molded and, you know, shaped him and how he turned out the way he was.
I mean, just on those three lines, so you're very much an autobiography person. Are you more interested in people than than stories as such?
Kind of like how, you know, you like to talk to people and get to know them. It's the same thing. I like to, and it's great when you get people who actually read their own, because sometimes you get nice little tidbits or things thrown in.
Yeah.
You know, versus if you get somebody else to read it.
I used to be a massive reader. I just haven't, well, again, I say time, right? But no, it's what I choose to do with my time. Doesn't involve books so much. But yeah, I do love autobiographies. I think, like you said, it's stories. It's real people. I mean, I've even read biographies of football managers of teams that I don't support, because it doesn't matter that I don't support them, or I don't say I might not even like the team, but that manager was iconic for whatever reasons. And I want to hear about, at that period of time, what being like a football manager was like.
Exactly.
You know, Steve Martin, I think I've read the Steve Martin one, just because, again, the amount of years he's been in Hollywood films, mm-hmm. et cetera, is just, why wouldn't you be interested in what he's got to say?
Yeah. Well, it's like, so Matthew Perry, I didn't know his dad was the original Old Spice guy.
Oh, really?
That was his dad. Yeah, exactly. That was my reaction. I was like, what? And his, kind of like with Dave, his mom was big in the politics, and the first Prime Minister Trudeau, not Justin now, she was working for him. So Matthew and Justin Trudeau were together, and apparently Matthew beat up Justin Trudeau, which is really...
Yeah,
exactly. I beat up the Prime Minister when we were five. It's...
Oh dear. And Friends was never shown in Canada again.
No, but the way his book is, Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing, it's a little scatterbrained and a little ADHD, bounces back and forth a lot, but it's worth the listen to.
But I think, like you said, though, the fact that it's then read by him, you can almost, that's the person then, isn't it? And that's, if right. that's the style he's written, that's how he would be talking to you, I guess. So
yes.
Yeah.
So I think it makes it a little bit better when, you know, they actually get to read their own. I have one I've been meaning to listen to. It's on here on my to-do list, but it's Pete Townsend, the guitarist for The Who.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that'll be an interesting... We talk about stories, right?
Right.
Yeah. What about Ozzy Osbourne? Has he got one?
I don't know. I'm going to go look now. He needs one. That's, somebody needs to be writing stuff down.
Okay, right. So now I've gone on to the more, well, when I say vague things, but more general topics again. So I've put 1 to 3 gigs. Now, they can be gigs you've been to, gigs you've seen. It might not necessarily be massive sort of arena concerts. It could be something local. So did you have anything for this?
What I did was I picked 3 gigs that are also available on YouTube. So if you want to go watch them, you can. Because sometimes I do that as well. If I'm playing a game for the podcast or something, I'll put on music in the background.
Okay, yeah.
One of these I found out about later through Instagram Reels. I didn't even know it happened. I would have flown to Colorado to see this, but it was the South Park 25th anniversary concert.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right? So they did a bunch of songs from the show like you would expect, but then they had 3 major bands. Because I don't know if you know, do you know who Primus is?
Yes, yeah.
So Primus did the theme song for South Park. So they had Primus out there that night to jam with them. They went through the history of like how the theme songs were made, which was cool to see. Plus, I mean, Les Claypool, he plays the bass like he invented the damn thing. They had Ween, who did a couple songs. So most notoriously would be The Mollusk and Ocean Man. And then the last one who was there to play with them was Rush.
Oh, really?
Geddy and Alex. Yeah.
Wow. How come? How come Rush?
Rush, well, they're big fans, and apparently Trey Parker is like a massive Rush fan. And they just,
so why not? Yeah.
Matt Stone is a massive Rush fan, and Trey Parker worked his magic and was like, here you go, buddy, this is for you, and had him out there, and they played Closer to the Heart. Just one song. It's kind of sad. Geddy's voice from all these years is just kind of, it's gone. But to see all three of those play, or four rather, that'd be just wild.
Yeah, yeah. Did they have, because I'm sure I saw some clips of this, did they have like an orchestra there as well?
Or? No, they've done an orchestra set. They've hired an orchestra to do a bunch of their songs because I think those guys are at the point where they have too much money and think, well, oh, that would be funny.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. But they did have like backup singers. They got the Red Rocks Theater in Colorado. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's basically like a gorge and like a mountain, essentially.
Okay.
Converted into a stage with seating and everything. The acoustics in it are wild.
That's an interesting one. Yeah.
It's on YouTube. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. It's worth to put on and just watch them go through it and watch them perform everything live. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Then there's the Foo Fighters 808 session. So when Wasting Light was coming out, they filmed them playing the whole album in the studio. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's a good little 45 minute watch. It's a lot of fun to see them, you know, in the studio and so close to each other. And you don't have concert noise in the background. Yes, you know, you don't have that one person who can scream loud enough that the stage mic can find it.
Oh, I've been seeing some videos of that, of the Taylor Swift concert.
Oh, yeah. And all people here is like, you know, next to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I feel bad for those people. And then the last one, this is another one of my favorite albums, and it was nearly a contender for this. It is My Chemical Romance playing their last showing of the Black Parade.
Okay, all right.
Which they did on the Day of the Dead in Mexico City. Yeah, so that's how they ended the tour.
Wow. Okay.
And if you don't know about the Black Parade album, it's a rock opera. The whole album is a rock opera. It's about a man who dies, and it's his journey to the afterlife. So intense. It is, but it's about the journey, what he's going through, and the experience of it. And they don't tell you where he ends up either. It's like open for interpretation kind of thing.
Again, a real mixer. I mean, South Park, you open with South Park. I thought, where could it go from there?
Well, my other option on here, I would like to point out my fourth one that I thought of was
go for it,
because I think you would agree with this, the Beatles rooftop concert when they're recording the last album.
Yeah. Have you seen the Peter Jackson documentary?
I have, yes.
I keep saying it, it's incredible how they've restored that footage. It looks like it's from today, right?
It does. It? And watching those guys work out the songs that you know and love and you've heard, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And you're like, that's not, come on, John, you know better, you know.
Do you know what, right? I wouldn't have necessarily thought of that, but I'm now kicking myself. I feel guilty that even though I've not been asked, that wouldn't have been in my three that I would have selected. It's, do you know what? And seeing that, because I'm a huge Beatles fan as well, was that was like, pretty much the last appearance, and the fact that people had gone off them at the time, or the people around there weren't really appreciating it, and it just felt
it just felt like an odd
finale almost, didn't it?
Right. It is, but I think it's the perfect send off for the four of them, honestly.
Yeah.
And then my favorite thing is the camera cutting to the police officers when they come up on the roof, and it's like, it's the Beatles, and you see them standing there like,
It's like, what do we do? Such a great documentary. I'm actually going to watch it again. I'd recommend it to anyone. Oh,
it's excellent.
Because it's Let It Be, isn't it? I bought the Super Deluxe, but the CD box set, because I got it for, it was a really good price on Amazon. And some of the songs, they are quite emotional, but also it's almost like you could hear that it was the end of them in that album, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could tell just between the writing and the tension sometimes in the studio, you could just about cut it with the knife.
Yeah, and also because we're going off on the Beatles now. The other thing is amazing that they really only had like a 5 or 6 year lifespan, didn't they, as a band?
Yeah.
I thought they'd probably had a decade at least or a couple of decades.
No, I think it was Ringo who said like we maybe would have only put out 3 albums if it hadn't been for like Paul's work ethic, you know, dragging us back to the studio.
Yeah, because you could see in that documentary, Paul really is the excited one. He's the one who wants to keep it going, isn't he? And
yeah.
Yeah. Right, but we're not here to talk about the Beatles, but that's a really good, yeah, to be a fly on the wall on that rooftop. Absolutely. And just to go back to the South Park one, they do here in London, Royal Albert Hall, you get often a lot of like the Royal Philharmonic playing film scores or game scores seem to be quite interesting, popular now.
Yes.
I really do want to go to one of those. I think it's just incredible because game scores, I think, I'm not going to say they're underappreciated in the gaming world. Absolutely, they're appreciated. But in terms of a wider audience, game scores, take a look at like the Halo theme, etc.
Oh, yeah.
Even the Mass Effect. There's some incredible bits of music goes into games.
Oh, there is. There's far more like in the way music's composed for it than you really think, to be honest. But I mean, even small games like Stardew Valley, which is like solo indie dev, it's getting a, you know, the, I don't want to say theatrical, but like the orchestra, how do you say that? Orchestra release where the, you know, they go out and perform it live.
Yeah, it's amazing really to think where we're at in terms of, yeah, gaming isn't the preserve of people just in their bedrooms playing a geeky game. We're now getting orchestras in the Royal Albert Hall performing soundtracks. We now move on to the final section I had. So I had 1 to 3 sporting events. And again, don't have to be necessarily something you've attended. It could be a local thing. It could be a college thing. It could be you saw the 19... I won't put an age on you because I don't know. So we'll call it the 2000 Olympics and you want to be a shot putter or a discus thrower. You know. Let's hear.
So I have 3 for you. Now, Dan, you're about to learn something else about me. I play golf.
Okay. Oh, really?
I played high school, played in college. So play a good bit. Now, there is the... most people think golf, boring, quiet sport. Except for a legendary hole 16 at the Waste Management Open in Phoenix, Arizona. Hole 16 is like down at the end of like a cul-de-sac or like the very end of a street, essentially.
Right.
And people, and it has a bar attached to it, people just go and they get drunk and they yell at golfers like it's a football game.
Brilliant.
It's a lawless, wild spot, and it's the only spot like that on the whole tournament and the entire course.
Because golf is supposed to be such a refined and you know, sort of...
Right.
The gentle clapping, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But no, none of that at hole 16. We will have none of that, Dan. You should just look up highlights from it. It seems like such a good, it's like one big frat party is what it seems like.
Oh, definitely. I'll be looking at that.
If somebody actually like, it's a long par 4, but if somebody actually like makes it into the hole, you'll see people start throwing beer cans at the green.
Oh, that's superb. Yeah, that is like a mix between golf and football, isn't it?
It is. It's you can tell the golfers enjoy it too, because it's kind of like a, I guess just a big tone shift in the rest of their day.
Yeah.
All right. So Dan, I'm a big fan of Auburn University. That's my college football team of choice, you know, American football. So the 2010 national championship, we went for a undefeated season that year and got all the way through playoffs, beating South Carolina, and then finally winning the college football champions against Oregon 22-19. It's a very close game, but that's our last one. And we still talk about it occasionally. And Auburn has a great like college football culture.
Yeah.
But the one I think is more important than that, which I have here on the list last. Dan, we have to set the scene. Now, Jordan-Hare Stadium, which is Auburn University Stadium, is known as one of, like, if you're the opposing team, it's known as one of the loudest stadiums to try and play in.
Nice.
And the atmosphere is always really tense with the fans and everything. Like, and it, again, you can barely hear the announcer sometimes because of how loud Jordan-Hare can get. There's a thing that happened in 2013 called Kick Six. Okay, I want to explain this to you. So we are at the fourth quarter. Alabama's winning 27-21, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we go, we're nearing 30 seconds left in the entire football game, right? Auburn manages to catch up, and it is now 28-28.
Wow. Okay.
Right? Now, there's 1 second left on the clock. 1 second before we go into overtime, right? Now, yeah. If you know this about American football, as long as the ball is in play, even if the clock hits zero, they can keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
Alabama attempts a 57-yard, or that's around 60 meters, field goal attempt. You know, because they're thinking nothing about it. You know, they're just like, put the ball. Auburn will probably take a knee and we'll go into overtime.
Yeah.
Except for they don't count on Chris Davis, who catches the ball in the end zone and runs it back 106 yards for a touchdown.
Wow.
to win the game.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
How's he done that thing?
So the field is only 100 yards, but end zone to end zone.
Yeah.
So they're counting, if you count the yardage in there, they're about 4 or 5 yards.
Right.
So he ran it all the way back across the field, past every single defender.
But that's what I'm saying. How's he got past everyone?
Yeah, it's a massive run is all it is. He grabbed it and took off like a rocket.
Wow. And so were you there, or is it televised?
I was watched. It's televised. All the college football games are televised.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm there with friends and family, and I'm a house divided. So we have Auburn fans and Alabama fans there. And to watch that with everybody and everyone just go nuts over the fact that, like, it literally went down to not only the last second to time technically being up and him just booking it.
Yeah, because that doesn't often happen at all, right? Does it?
No, it's extremely rare.
Yeah, even in my limited knowledge of the sport. Yeah. Wow,
that's like a one in a lifetime run to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess the other players were probably just standing there sort of aghast. No. Is that actually happening? Is he doing that?
Yeah. And, you know, there's a thing that happens where they, you know, the students storm the field to celebrate with the players.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And Jordan-Hare Stadium holds around 86,000 people.
Wow.
So they're jumping over the, you know, the railing and everything, trying to celebrate with the player.
Wow. Because college football is absolutely massive there, isn't it?
Especially if you live the Southeast region is known for dominating the rest of the country, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's an incredible. That's a you were there moment or you were watching moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a story, isn't it? That's a story that gets handed down. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So they call that game the Iron Bowl because the two major universities is Auburn University and the University of Alabama.
Yeah.
Here in, the state of Alabama. And during the Iron Bowl, honestly, would be like the best time to rob a bank because everybody's watching the game. You don't see anybody out on the roads. No one's going into restaurants, you know. Yeah.
So, when was this? What year was this?
2013.
And the player, so obviously you have to excuse my, lack of knowledge.
Chris Davis.
So what, did he go on to?
Oh, yeah. He went off to the professionals and everything. Okay. And I think he's a coaching assistant nowadays.
Okay. Okay. I haven't been to many football soccer games, but the thing I love about it is I'm often for about half the game, I'm not watching a match. I'm looking around at the stadium. It's the fans. It's the noise, isn't it? The flags, the team colors, you know, the big demonstrations they do with like the banners, etc. It's just an incredible atmosphere to be in, isn't it?
It is. And that's the other thing is that it kind of brings everybody together under something common that you can, you know, have fun with. And you may not even know the person next to you, but by the end of the game, you might have a new friend, you know?
Yes. Doesn't sport have a way of unifying just random people, random strangers?
Yes, is the answer, I would say.
And I do want to, because I'm aware of the time and I want to look at wrapping up, but I want to go right back to the start of this segment. So you play golf then?
I do play golf, yes.
That is one I would love to play it. I can't play it. I don't think my back would be or shoulders would be up for playing it now. So I think I've got problems there. But yeah, so did you say how long you've been playing it for, did you say?
Since I was probably about 4, Evan, and I'm 29 now. So I've been playing for some time. Yeah.
Oh, you're so young as well. So, yeah, what is it? Is it just about the sport? What is it?
So with golf, it's also kind of that social aspect. You know, you go out with you and three friends and, you know, for 4 hours, it's just y'all a bit of nature and drinking, probably one too many drinks nowadays, you know.
Yeah, because where I used to live, the guy opposite on a Sunday, you'd see him go out with his golf clubs and then just rock up. This was about like 8, 9 in the morning. He'd rock back up about 6, 7 at night. And it's like just going out for the day. That's all it is, right?
It's really what it is. And it's a nice time. Golf is fun. I don't want to say it's a relaxing sport, but it's very challenging sport to participate in.
Yeah.
Because it's not only physical, it's also mental. That's the other half of it. So like... Yeah. If you get in your own head, like, oh, I'm doing awful today, this is terrible, you're going to do worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. Like any of those solo sports, it's all on you, isn't it?
Yep.
It's all on you. Yeah.
I played by the rules in college and high school, a lot of people, they'll pull out their fancy rangefinder and things like that.
Yeah.
See, that's like a weird concept to me, because when you play by, you know, the rule set and everything, you're not allowed to use one.
Right. Okay.
So you have to look and know what it is, you know, be able to figure it out yourself.
Yeah. Well, Slade, I think we've learned, well, we've definitely learned a bit about you there now in this. Thank you for coming on. And again, thank you for the idea. I do love stuff like this.
I can't wait to see where it goes off to. So we have the Casting Views cookbook, the Casting Views watch list. Yes. Right, and I guess eventually the Casting Views Spotify soundtrack will be
and the Casting Views book of greatest sporting moments.
Exactly. It's just going to be a couple different books. Find them in your local bookstore at some point.
Can I say copyright or can I say TM? Does that cover me?
I think that's got you covered.
I can't wait for this. Books to be out soon. If somebody will help me write these books, please let me know. Before we go, do you just want to do your sales pitch? Because I know you're brilliant at doing this. So for your pods and where people can get you.
No problem. Hello, everybody. My name is Slade. I'm 1/3 of the Game Club podcast. You can find me at all things at Slade Plays Games, except for Instagram. That's Slade's life. At the Game Club pod, you've obviously heard us talk about Between Two Pods, which I've had Dan on for a conversation. I got to rack up new questions or, you know, make sure he watches Attack on Titan first before he comes back. That's going to be the caveat.
There we go.
We also have two blokes from Blighty, Joey and Tim, just like to talk about a lot of nothing and make jingles to my annoyance. There is the Game Club. Like I said, we review video games once every 2 weeks, not too dissimilar to a book club. The DLC, if one of us wants to talk about a game and the other two aren't too interested in, do a little deep dive into it for about 20 or so minutes. Oh gosh, what else do we have? We have the Anime Corner. Once a month, we talk about anime. And what's the last thing? It's Tim's show. He hasn't done one in a while.
Game Changers.
Game Changers. He's done two of those. I wish he'd do more. I thought the first two were pretty good.
Really good, actually. Yeah. So do make sure you subscribe into the Game Club pod. It is brilliant. Listen. And I'm going to stand up for Joey. I love the jingles on Two Blokes. I love them. I had the honor of being on an episode of Two Blokes from Blight. It was one of the most nerve-wracking experiences beforehand. But the three of you and, you know, your solo stuff, all your pods, all great listens. So, do check them, do subscribe them. Look, Slade, thank you again. Can't wait to work out how I can get you on for another show. So when you've got me giving me another idea, you'll be on for that one.
As soon as I come up with one. Yeah. Here's what we do, Dan. My idea off the top of my head. We pick a Beatles album, we listen to it, and we talk about it.
I'm in. There we go. I'm in. For me, you're listening to me, so you know where you can get me. Social media, just look for Casting Views across all the platforms, or you can drop me a note at castingviewspod@gmail.com. And as I said, if you've heard the dinner party episode or this is your first episode, I would love to get other podcasters onto this and that episode. So drop me a note, let me know if you're interested, and I will see you next time.
Goodbye, everybody.
1, 2, 3, 4. If I want your opinion, I will give it to you.
Come on, check what we've got, cause you need it. Don't make us get a spork and force feed it. Come on, we've got it.